Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
I've really gotten into podcasts since we started this. Did you know the number one podcast in The Good Place is Mozart and Jimi Hendrix talking about music? And the number one podcast in The Bad Place is Joseph Stalin recapping The Bachelor.
Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Chapter 29, Season 3, Episode 2, The Brainy Bunch, directed by Jude Wang, written by Dan Schofield, including guest cast Nicholas Dubberley, Antoinette Isu, Mike O'Malley, Maya Rudolph, and Adam Scott. Trevor infiltrates the study group and tries to get them each to quit. Janet poses as a waitress to combat Trevor's efforts. Trevor gets in Chidi's head about how it's unprofessional to socialize with the subjects of his study, so Chidi tells Eleanor he can't do one-on-one studies with her. Chidi then stops Eleanor from bailing on the study and Australia. The judge catches Trevor and Michael cheating and hauls them back to the afterlife. Michael and Janet escape back to Earth, where her item queue starts printing, and the doorman helps them out. My guests today are writer of the episode Dan Schofield and Kirby Howell-Baptiste, who plays Simone. Kirby and Dan, welcome. Everything is Earth, I guess? Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
This is a very interesting place we find ourselves in. Kirby, people know you from Barry and Love. We've already talked about Killing Eve on this podcast. It's something that one of the writers, Demi, brought up as what's good.
Oh, cool.
You're everywhere. You're doing lots of cool things. What is your background? Where do you come from?
I'm from London, originally. I moved out to LA about 7 years ago, and I was in London, and I hadn't done much. I did, like, background work and some theatre, and I was at drama school, and I didn't love the drama school I was at, so I left, moved here, and then just sort of, I moved here, I think, at a good time, a time where I was like, I don't know, this could be fun without realizing how hard it could be.
Oh, was it not immediately easy?
No, you'd think. Right. But no, it's actually what everyone says is true. It is difficult. But I was like, okay, sure. I'll see you at 23 with my Oscar. Don't have it yet.
Weird.
It's weird how not everything you want comes to you immediately. and then, yeah, I worked my way up here. And here I am. I did comedy at UCB.
I was going to say, I feel like I know you through that model as well.
Yeah, I did sketch. I was on a Maud team first. And then I also do improv. And then I was on a Harold team. And now I'm on a monthly team called Benetton. And we perform at UCB Sunset on like the second Saturday of every month.
Did you say you were on a Maud team?
What's Maud, like Harold and Maud.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
The opposite of a Harold.
Exactly. Yes.
Interesting.
So Maud is all sketch and then Harold is all improv.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that at the table read for, I think, the first episode of the third season, we read it. And it was obviously the role of Simone was such a juicy one that after the table read, we were all sort of huddled and saying, like, who are you thinking about for Simone? And Mike Shore said, we were thinking about Kirby, and Darcy Carden got very excited.
Oh, yeah. Darcy's great.
She got very excited that you were in the mix for this.
You know what's so funny is, well, Darcy and I know each other from UCB first, and then we also work on Barry together. But I told Darcy when... obviously I didn't tell her that I was auditioning for this or anything. So I auditioned, and then I think maybe after that conversation, when she heard my name, she texted me and was like, I had no idea, you know, it's great. She said, you know, best of luck for the callback. And I texted her back and I was like, you know what? It's just so nice to meet Mike. Mike is so lovely. And I was like, but I probably won't get this. Like, I think it's like, it's such a great show and I'm sure everyone wants to do it. So it's probably going to go to like a celebrity, which has happened before when I've gone, you know, for like recurrings.
And of course,
it's like, yeah, you get a celebrity because they love the show. And then when I got the call, I was like, after my callback, I went to, I took myself to lunch at an Indian buffet, my favorite food and my favorite way to be served, as much as I want. So I went to an Indian buffet and my manager called me and asked how it went. And I was like, it's great. You know, honestly, I had such a nice time. I met Will. I met, it was just Will, Mike, and Allison, Allison Jones, who cast it. And, it was really small and intimate. And I was like, I just had a lovely time. And whatever happens, I'm here. I have Indian food. I'm great. And then I got a call a little while later and I booked it.
Same day? Exciting. Did you get called?
No, I didn't. I got called a couple days later. I think maybe two or three, perhaps.
So as a working actor, like, you go out for things that I'm sure you are often unfamiliar with. Oftentimes, yeah. I have to go on Hulu or Netflix or whatever to, you know, sort of get up to speed on the show that I'm auditioning for to see the tone. Had you seen seasons one or two of The Good Place?
Yes, I'm fully up to date.
Is that right?
Truly, the only downside of being on the show is that I know spoilers.
Yes.
Because I watch the show.
That's a double-edged sword, isn't
it? Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I mean, the good thing is I don't know everything that's going to happen, which is still fun for me. I know what happens with me, but I don't know the rest of the stuff. But I'm a huge fan of the show. I think it's great. I think I'm constantly in awe. I mean, Dan's here. I'm constantly in awe of the writers. Mm-hmm. I think it's so funny. There's such attention to detail, as, you know, we'll talk about in this episode. Like, honestly, I think The Good Place has the best comedy writers on TV. It's really, really cool.
I also am a fan.
Yes.
Dan Schofield.
Sounds great.
talk a little bit about what went on in the writer's room leading into this season. You made the very bold choice of being reincarnated on Earth or never having died or what have you. Those have to have been interesting conversations.
They were, absolutely. Yeah. We had a lot of long conversations leading into this season about the sort of corner we'd painted ourselves into and
precisely
how we were going to get out of it.
We've talked previously on this show about your being sort of the logic cop. Were there tricky spots in that? You know, the reboot still happened. These characters had died and they spent X amount of time in the afterlife, 802 reboots, which could be seconds or could be years, right?
You'll see.
Okay. Oh, does that get addressed? These are dangerous questions. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, there are logic traps, right?
Certainly, certainly. And I think one of the hardest things that we'd set up for ourselves was, you know, in the finale of season two, we cover a year of Eleanor's life. And so then we had to, you know, in the premiere, go back and cover a year in the lives of everyone else and sort of make sure that it all lined up correctly and, you know, figure out a way to get them together that made sense or almost made sense.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you know, I certainly, as Mike said in the episode 213 version of this podcast, he said, like, about something like, we live now in the magical world of the show. So you
sure.
have to, you know.
Sure.
I think it was in reference to Chidi's accent.
But, right.
You know, watch the show.
Yeah.
Get on board. Kirby, you are English.
I am, yeah.
You are one of the few people doing a good Australian accent. Oh, there are lots of bad Australian accents in this show. Is that a muscle you've exercised before?
Only in joking with my friends.
Sure.
But never, not professionally, no.
Interesting.
So I was quite nervous about it. I watched endless YouTube. I mean, in London, there are a lot of Australian people. So it's not an accent that was completely unfamiliar to me.
Sure.
I had a dentist that was from Australia. So it was like an accent that he wasn't good. That's nothing to do with him being Australian, but just.
He wasn't a good accent.
He was actually
or
an
dentist.
Orthodontist.
Okay.
He was a bad orthodontist. Good accent. I don't think his bad dentistry was to do with him being from Australia, but you never know because Australia, part of the Commonwealth, England, bad sure. teeth, you know, maybe.
So some of that's true?
Yes. No, it's very true.
What were you told about the character of Simone when you were going into this?
Not very much, actually. I was told that she was, I knew her profession. I knew she was a neuroscientist. And I knew that she was very smart. But that what the main thing that I was told, I think, was that her type of smart doesn't present itself in the same way that Chidi's does. Chidi's manifests as a lot of anxiety and stress and sort of really broad thinking about the world that in a way that sort of like renders him a little paralyzed,
sort
of inactive. Whereas I think Simone's intelligence is different in that it excites her, like possibility excites her and the world excites her, and it doesn't, all the questions are kind of fun and you explore them and then you either get answers or you don't and you move on.
Right.
So that was really exciting for me because that was something I kind of relate to. Obviously, I'm not, you know, I think she's incredibly intelligent in this field. But I do like the idea of, like, for me, when I read it, I just thought she was a really fun character, and learning to her was just like an extension of an adventure.
For sure.
Yeah.
She's sort of, in a double-barreled way, the opposite of Chidi, in the sense that, yes, she's fun. Like, she's easygoing. Like, I love the performance. I think it's in the hour-long season premiere where Simone says, like, so wait, you're telling me this? You just want me to do this? I love it. That's crazy. You're nuts. This is weird. Yeah. You know, like, she's easygoing, which is a contrast to who Chidi is. But Dan, it's also a contrast in the sense that Chidi's world is amorphous and guesswork, and you can, you know, nothing's measurable. But in neuroscience, you're like, let's plug it in and get some data,
yeah,
and we'll know.
Right. Yeah. Let's do the experiment and get the results.
Was that a topic of conversation? Like, let's provide the yin to Chidi's yang or vice versa?
Yeah, a little bit. And, you know, not just personally, but also in terms of the sort of, you know, ways of approaching life of he's seeking answers in these sort of big unanswerable questions. And she's seeking some of the same answers, but in a much different way of sort of, you know, peering inside people's brains.
And why is this character called Simone?
it started as a sort of bizarre room joke. Or I don't know if it started as a joke. It may have just started as an actual name. And then we started talking about the movie Sim 1.
Oh, no.
That Al Pacino movie with a fully CGI actress.
I don't know this movie.
Rightly, the whole world has forgotten. And so then we were frequently just referring to the character as Sim 1. And then we tried to change her name because it was just a terrible association. But we'd gone too far. We'd broken too much story, and just her name was Simone.
But now this makes me wonder, and whether this exists in the podcast or not, Sim 1 suggests that, like, is Simone some sort of Janet?
No, absolutely not.
Then why would you go there?
The sort of like vagaries of room jokes and what sticks are impossible to explain sometimes. Okay. That was just a joke that didn't go anywhere.
One of my favorite things about the season premiere episode is the scene when you put Chidi into the MRI.
Yeah.
And you're asking some baseline questions. It's fun that I think in the scene prior, you say this is the part of your brain that went crazy active when you were trying to choose between red and blue.
Yeah.
But it's a really fun bit of romantic comedy farce when Simone and Eleanor are saying, okay, Chidi, we're going to ask you some questions. And Eleanor turns it into like the world's most potent lie detector test of why hasn't he asked Simone out yet kind of thing. Like, that's a really, I don't know if you've seen that scene yet. You probably haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that scene, but I'm really familiar with that scene because that was, I don't know why it sticks in my head. It might have been one of my first or second day, but it really sticks in my mind, that scene. So I feel like I still know it word for word.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great. It was really a lot of fun. And yeah, I get exactly what you mean of it being like in its own, like a little mini rom-com vignette within the episode. And
I think it's really special. It's you know, feature-worthy rom-com. And it's I love that you really toy with him. Like,
yeah,
at one point, Eleanor says, like, nope, it will ruin the science. And then when he finally does ask you out, you go, wow, super inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like, can't be done.
Yeah, I think that's Simone's whole thing is I think that's also why she gets on so well with Chidi, because I think other people take him really seriously and she kind of doesn't. She thinks it's cute. She thinks all his kind of like, all his neuroses are really cute and funny. I think that works.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
We've left the episode just prior with a big cliffhang, and that is that there's a joiner to the group, and it is Trevor, who maybe second to Sean is a pretty terrible dude. And I was actually interested to learn, because I don't think I realized this in any of the scripts that I saw, that Trevor's there on Sean's behalf. He says, Sean hacked the system and found out, so he sent as an emissary for that. I don't think I even realized that. And he shows up with disgusting lemon bars, being a disgustingly obsequious, over-friendly person. It's got to be fun to write for Adam Scott to play like an even heightened, friendly Trevor.
Yeah. I mean, he does the different modes so well. You mm-hmm. know, he does the jerk so well, and he does sort of the milquetoast so well. And to give him the opportunity to do sort of both modes and switch between them in this episode was, everybody knew that it was going to be so fun to write.
We talked in the first two seasons of this podcast about never seeing Michael alone because he would be twirling his mustache. We see a little mustache twirling here. Trevor's friendly. It's right before the cold open ends, I think. Trevor's being friendly to Eleanor. She looks away, and we see him sort of tip his head down and get dark, and there's a musical twist that happens.
I think it's the same music that's the push-in on Michael from
it's
the realization.
Both, Holy Mother Forking Shirtballs from 113, and it's also when they were under the train.
Absolutely.
And he goes, you guys!
Yep.
It's the same music.
Yep.
It's so effective.
It's great.
So the experiment is to show... We've gathered the humans together under the pretense of they've all had these near-death experiences, and you're going to put them in and show them trigger images. And Jason's are so sad, a safe and what, whippets and...
A snorkel.
A snorkel, yeah.
Because he has to breathe in the safe.
So terrible. It's a fun thing to think about these actors who've played these characters for 2 years on the show already and have had a lot of interface and know each other, playing different people. Kirby, you were working in, you know, these scenes with the MRI and the study with this group who've been together already, but now they're playing characters who don't know one another. Like, it's an interesting and weird, complex puzzle.
Yeah, it's very interesting because obviously after 2 years, they have even more chemistry than I'm sure they kind of had. They're also a group of people. I've been incredibly fortunate in my career. I've had so few negative experiences and so many positive ones. And this was one of them, like coming onto a set where all of the cast genuinely enjoy each other and they genuinely enjoy being around each other is lovely to walk into when you're, when you're a guest. Yeah, when you're a guest, because it's nervous. It's like going into, it's starting school when the term's already started and everyone already knows each other and you're like, oh. So it's wonderful. But yeah, I thought about that in that episode of we're all sort of strangers to each other, but yet they still have this incredible chemistry. But I think they're all brilliant actors, so they can act that they don't know each other. And I think what then makes it still so interesting is that underlying is the chemistry that they have built over
as
the
humans.
Last 2 years as
as
real people.
I think that the dialogue works into this somewhat. There's a funny bit where Tahani's asking about whether her very thin but very pure gold bra will set off the machine, and Eleanor tells a terrible story about her rust colored stains as though somehow rust color will react as a metal. But Tahani begins that line with the word darling, which I don't think we've ever heard her say before. That feels like a very deliberate Tahani talking to strangers intro.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting from a writing standpoint because the audience has so many expectations of the ways that these characters interact with each other. And we sort of have to, you know, gently try to highlight that they don't truly know each other and that the dynamics that you're sort of expecting maybe aren't exactly what's happening in a scene.
What is a dank meme?
Great, great question. I don't want to be sent one, but
I don't know what I know what a meme is, but is dank just like dirty, dark?
I think it's meant to be out of Trevor's mouth, sort of, you know, not exactly right. You know, the things that he's bringing up are all things that are 2 to 5 years old.
Okay,
later when he's at the
What is Damn Daniel?
Damn Daniel is
that was great.
Probably 2 years old at this point. Later, he mentions the Harlem Shake, which has got to be at least
so old.
Got to be at least 5 years
that
old.
That one
at this
I know.
Point.
I'll tell you what, though. Just yesterday on the set of Barry, Darcy Carden dropped to Damn Daniel. So I guess you're bringing it back.
What is it? What are we talking about?
It was a Vine.
Okay,
which was just a high school student taking footage of one of his classmates arriving every day, and it was just what that guy was wearing. And it's like an off-screen narration of him saying, "Damn Daniel," like, and frequently saying, "Back at it again with the white Vans," which is what Jason says, Vans, the shoes.
Sneakers, yeah.
It was, you know, one of those weird things that inexplicably caught the attention of the internet.
And it's actually, it holds up. I won't lie to you.
Yeah.
If you watch it, it holds up.
It's entertaining.
But I also am a fan of things that, I think that's why this episode particularly tickled me. I'm a fan of things that are a little old. Like if someone quotes Borat and does a my wife, it kills me. So I do enjoy things that are sort of rinsed and then we forgot about them.
Sure.
And then so funny to remember them again.
Absolutely.
In as much as I'm unfamiliar with the ways of the internet and vines and such, Michael is terribly struggling throughout this episode with the structure of a Dick Tracy called joke.
Yeah.
And it's so great.
Yeah.
It's a very funny thing that he doesn't get.
It's also great that that he's like gone down to Earth to be sort of a secret agent, and he apparently decides that he needs a, you know, a fedora and an overcoat.
1940s.
To do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's in keeping with sort of the Bad Place Architect's Office sort of thing. But yeah, the trench coat and the fedora does seem very period, I guess. How do things get through standards and practices? And I'm thinking specifically of lines like blowing beefers while you're down on Earth, boning us in the meat hole.
I don't know.
I mean, that's fairly filthy.
It hasn't, the episode hasn't aired as we're recording this. And right. I got to assume that at some point, somebody over at NBC is going to say, this can't go on the air.
Oh, is that possible?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, that's so interesting.
At every stage of this going to script and going to table and going, I kept expecting that line to fall away. And it sort of soldiered through.
So to put things in context for the listener, we're recording this episode of the podcast having just watched a secret link to a private file of the just last night completed locked episode of the show. Prior to that, we had been sent a link that had temporary effects in it. It had temporary ADR in it, line fixes and such, some of which I think may have been your voice, Dan.
It was probably Eric, actually.
Eric Kisak?
Yeah.
The editor?
Yeah.
It's very disconcerting to watch a cut of the show where when they walk through the portal that emerges in the bathroom and it's a green screen and it's just a doorway and you see them walk through and you see Ted kind of like walk out of frame.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Get through and stop.
Yeah, kind of go through and stop.
Should we reset?
Then we see on the bridge later, you see the boom operators standing in frame with their big boom microphones trying to get it.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird. I mean, I do this for a living, so I'm on set, but to see it sort of, you know, composited together as a finished piece, but then you see these unfinished elements, like, it's disconcerting.
Yeah.
And you see it all the time in the edit suite, right? Like, that's how you begin the process.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is that what we saw as a completed thing just a few minutes ago, standards could still come in and go, you can't say blowing beefers while you're down on Earth boning us in the meat hole.
I assume it's gone through every hurdle that it needs to. I'm just surprised that it did. And I can't claim credit for that line.
Oh, is that right? No.
Nor would I. at some
so maybe,
point...
So maybe you did write it?
I actually don't remember who was responsible for it. But at some point, Mike actually put into the official version of the script that right after that line was said, that the title written by Dan Schofield should come up on the screen.
Oh, he does that
sometimes,
doesn't
he? Wanted to specifically tie my name to that line, even though I didn't.
Has that happened at some point elsewhere in the... Oh, no, I'm sorry. This was this table read I'm remembering.
Yeah.
Because at this table read, that line gets said, and then Mike, who reads the stage directions, said, put the card in that says Dan Schofield.
Yeah, written by Dan Schofield. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the script fixes and you know, logic cop stuff. There's a quick exchange where... I think it's Michael says, why didn't Sean just go to the judge and turn us in? And Trevor says, because this is more fun.
Yeah.
Like, that's the magical world of the show, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, it's an interesting line to walk. Like, some of what we're doing is trying to anticipate potential criticisms from the audience. You know, not literal criticisms, but just, you know, as you're sitting there watching a show, sometimes you might think, like, why didn't that happen? Why doesn't this person do this? And, you know, we're trying to sort of foreclose on some of those possibilities. But I mean, also it's, you know, if you're Trevor or if you're Sean, you've got to imagine like, oh, we're going to mess this up, but we're going to do it in the way that's most fun for us.
It is. I mean, it's a cheat, but it's a fun cheat. You know, I remember in earlier versions of this podcast saying like, oh, the reboots could have been undone by getting a new Janet. And Mike was like, yeah, but we didn't. Full episodes of The Good Place are available on NBC.com and the NBC app. Let's listen to a clip.
So listen up, y'all.
I was so excited to join the group
that I made sweatshirts. You get a sweatshirt. You get a sweatshirt. You
get a sweatshirt.
The Brainy Bunch.
Awesome. I love being on teams. And if we're on a team now, we need nicknames. Optimus, Bumblebee, Jazz, Megatron. That's what you can each call me. Now we need nicknames for you guys. Oh, this is the best! I'm gonna get the first round and we are all gonna toast Eleanor, the reason we're all here! Yay, Eleanor!
Oh, well, if you guys are celebrating, I recommend the jalapeno poppers. Hi there, I'm Janet. I'll be taking care of you tonight. Can I get you started with some drinks? Our specialty cocktail tonight is the 4th of July. It's half an apple pie blended with Southern Comfort and Coca-Cola, served in a Chevy hubcap.
Why don't you just go get us a round of beers?
Of course. Here you go. Sorry. I will go physically pick those up. I guess, and then walk them back here with my feet. But just so you know, I will be here all night watching everything that you order.
So, Ellie, baby, brainstorm. We should get a house.
Me, you, Tahani, Jason, we should all go in together on a place. Roomies!
Roomies!
That is technically an idea.
I think it would be soups fun. We could play pranks on each other for my vlog. We could do one of those ice bucket challenges that I sent you. That. Or maybe just a Harlem shake. I like to cook, and I have dying to experiment with Jamaican food, man. I like a Jamaican food. Listen to the reggae and smoke the joints. It's a Jamaican accent.
New episodes of The Good Place can be found Thursdays at 8:30, 7:30 Central on NBC.
Kirby, did you see those sweatshirts that they got in that scene?
No, not in real life. Only in the clip.
They're fantastically
ugly. Yeah.
Isn't Kirby on that sweatshirt?
Oh yeah, she's on the sweatshirt.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I did not know. Am I one of the rainy bunch?
Yeah, it's all six.
Whoa, I didn't know I was on the jumper as well. That's really cool.
I wonder where those sweatshirts ended up. They are amazingly ugly.
They have an incredible amount of writing on. What do they say on the back? Because I could only see it in clips like Jason, I think, turns.
You can pause it and read it. And it says, I went to Australia and all I got was this lousy cross-disciplinary study and a ton of new best friends.
Oh, that's both terrible and kind of sweet.
Yeah.
That's great.
And pithy, you know.
Yes.
The kind of thing you need on a sweatshirt.
At the wrap party, Kristen was wearing something, wasn't she?
Kristen was wearing a t-shirt, and I assumed it was one from the show because it was in the Good Place font.
The green
it was
writing?
White with green writing. But I don't know. I can't remember what it said.
It may be, as Lizzie reminded us, it may be a t-shirt that Kristen Bell had made that says, "What's up, dong bait?" Which is a line from, I think, her time on Earth. And
it's one of the flashbacks in season one, yeah.
Did that get cleared, that dong bait?
I think they made it.
They made it. Yeah. Oh, man.
Wow, you guys get away with a lot for a network show, huh?
Yeah, I think Fork and Shirt bought you a lot of green lights on some other questionable material.
There's so much mileage from Fork. People love it. Just today, I was talking to my manager who said, he was like, I just love the Fork thing. It'll never get old for me.
That's so funny.
It really, you get a lot of mileage out of it.
I get recounted tales on Twitter and such of like, kids who aren't allowed to swear in their homes that can say Fork and Shirt, which is like, that seems like a pretty slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because it's the intention, right? Because when you're like, what the fork? It's like, you've said it.
You may as well say
You can say it as much as you like, which is cool.
You know what you're doing.
This restaurant is terrible.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It is heaping piles of disgusting American fried gross. Were there stage directions? Did you look for, you know, obviously it's gross that just the food is piled, but like, I don't know. Did you hire overweight background actors to be Americans?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think it was just pretty standard background folks.
Okay.
We shot a lot of B-roll and there's a lot of great details that were there in the restaurant that unfortunately never made it to the final
Such
cut.
Such as?
Well, some of it did. You know, you see the Mount Rushmore with Hulk Hogan and Judge Judy and whatnot.
That was Judge Judy. She was the only one that I wasn't sure about.
Paris Hilton and David Hasselhoff.
And David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
That's
America.
Those are America's primary exports.
Yeah.
That's so very sad.
The Montana table is great.
I had to look that up. So on the Montana table, I mean, first of all, we should briefly address just how dark the Manifest Destiny package, where for $30 you can have anyone forcibly removed from their table.
Yeah, it's America.
I mean.
And the fact that instead of getting a buzzer, you get a gun.
Yeah,
a gun, which appears
so casually.
Real.
Real,
There is a great take of that scene where, as the hostess was handing over the gun, Manny just grabbed the gun and like cocked. He apparently had some sort of weapons training from some previous role, and he cocked it and like was ready to go like an action hero. And everyone, all the actors were very surprised.
Oh yeah, that'd be horrifying.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't use it, but it was hilarious.
Right, random gun violence is not hilarious.
It's not hilarious
in this current context.
Yeah.
But on set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I could also imagine that being fairly horrifying because there's a whole protocol whenever there's a firearm, even if it's made of solid rubber.
Yeah.
There's a whole protocol for the first AD to announce to the set like a safety meeting, showing you that it's empty or that it's fake or that it can't fire or whatever. So for an actor to unexpectedly grab a handgun and rack it, it's pretty funny.
It was great.
Oh, gun violence.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
The Montana table, I had to focus on and pause and rewind because it took me a second to go, wait, I know that character. Is that the church lady?
And then, of course, I Googled it, and Dana Carvey, who for some reason plays as Canadian in my mind, is legitimately from Wyoming, as are some people I understand that we don't see on the table.
There's Evel Knievel, who was, I guess, born in Montana also, and the Unabomber.
The attention to detail is incredible with the art department and set deck.
Yeah, some of the stuff like the menus, you don't even see. Like, those are full menus where all of the dishes have explanations and, you know, there's...
Of disgusting items.
Yeah, there's appetizers, there's entrees, there's drinks. It's all there.
Is that... We've talked a little bit about, you know, the Kierkegaard wrap and that sort of thing. Does the room provide that or does props go for it?
As I recall, that one was a bit of both. Okay. There was some stuff that we wrote and then I think props finished it out. But it was great. There were some of the explanations of things on there. It was all sort of like a Guy Fieri Golden Corral nightmare.
Golden Corral is exactly what I was trying
to
think of.
There. I can imagine it's so fun for them because I think set deck and all the art department have a fun job anyway, but to get to lean into the ridiculousness and the whimsy that you guys already set up from the writer's room, I can imagine it's just, and it's fun as actors when you get on set and you can read that. It's so fun to see that stuff.
The sort of genesis of it was we knew we needed to have these scenes in a restaurant. And then our understanding of Australia on the show is not nuanced, I would say. It's like we have there's like posters of koalas hanging everywhere and things like that.
That's real.
And so we were thinking, you know, if we're thinking of Australia like it's an Outback Steakhouse, like what's a reverse Outback Steakhouse? What's an Australian's, you know, heightened and perhaps misinformed view of America?
Now, that restaurant was something that you guys built, or was that an actual existing restaurant?
That was an actual restaurant in North Hollywood, I believe. It was some sort of hamburger restaurant that I think had maybe recently gone out of business.
Okay.
So we had sort of free reign to decorate it however we wanted.
Decorate it with a beer can American flag.
Beer can American flags, you know, cigar store Indians playing saxophones and wearing sunglasses.
It's so gross. It's so American.
There was a lot of, and the food itself was just heaping portions, everything covered in gravy, everything fried,
everything ranch.
Yeah. And lots of nice little touches in the props and in the set deck. You probably can't see it, but at one point they're drinking shots and it's Octomom brand vodka.
Octomom.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
the Octomom.
I think it's actually called Octomom Vodka Mom.
Which is sort of in keeping with Trevor in the sense like that's a 5 or 8 year old reference, right? Just like the Harlem Shake and Harlem Shuffle or whatever.
It takes a while for those things to get to Australia, I guess.
Oh, boy. Let's hear from one of our completely real sponsors.
Tahani Aljamel's best-selling novel, Get Out of the Spotlight. Are you feeling inundated by high society's demands? Are you wary of always having to eat the most exquisite reserve caviar, to wear the finest handmade couture, to vacation on your super yacht wearing your most precious gemstones? Renowned author and world-famous attractive person Tahani Aljamil has written the ultimate guide to getting away from the noise and focusing on what's truly important, mindful living. And for a limited time, buy tickets to the Get Out of the Spotlight cruise aboard a 520-foot luxury yacht called the SS Mindful Living. I'll see you there.
It's then great when the waitress is Janet. Like, that feels like a little bit of hope, right? The good guys are coming. Michael and Janet are not far away.
Right.
And they're trying.
They're watching their cockroaches.
But there's a hiccup because she's back on Earth, so she doesn't have her powers. She tries summoning beers. And then I feel like Darcy's given great things to do in these first couple of episodes of this new season and obviously brings it home perfectly. But for her to realize, like, oh, I will, okay, walk, I guess, to, you know, physically do some things. What other things does she try to summon?
Well, of course, there's a live animal because we try to write in live animals at any time that we can. There's a tortoise that I think shows up next to a plate of nachos on a
ridiculous
leather recliner.
I remember steamroller and like dictionary and spaghetti she mentions.
Sure, right? Those are things she mentions, yeah.
And I think one of the saddest lines that ever has been said on this show is said in this scene where she and Michael are huddling trying to interfere with Trevor's interference. She says something like, humans live for 80 years and they spend most of it waiting for it to be over or something?
Yeah, waiting for things to be over. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Right?
It's very sad.
It's not false.
It's not false. There's a scene that happens also in the sort of vestibule of the restaurant that I thought was really sweet, which is, you know, Chidi goes through this existential crisis and he said, I can't be part of this. We can be colleagues, associates, brother. Now you're a confidant. I can't do it. And Eleanor says, like, look, man, these guys are crazy, but I didn't come all this way to be with them. I came to be with you. And there's a bit of romance there. Like, even with Simone in the picture, like, there's a little bit of, that feels, you know, she's not hitting on him, but there's something really sweet and intimate in that moment, I feel like. Is that deliberate?
Sure. And I think it goes back a little bit to what I was saying earlier about, you know, the audience has these expectations and the audience knows so much about their lives and their relationships that even they don't at this point. So there's, you know, there's certainly like echoes of things and shades of things that, you know, however you write the scene, it's going to be there whether you want it to or not. And, you know, you want a little bit of it. You don't want too much. And
it's an interesting thing too, because Simone becomes this, you know, impediment. We know that if Eleanor and Chidi are ever to be romantically together, that Simone can't be. And they gave you a line that is really high context that suggests your relationship, which is Simone says to Chidi, you didn't sleep at all last night, which means she was there, which means they were together.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like, it's a...
And it means that we were in a real relationship because we weren't having sex.
Right.
He was just not sleeping.
Not sleeping.
Yeah.
But it's intimate that you know what, you know, that he didn't sleep all night and that he bit into an egg like it was an apple.
Like it was an apple. Yeah. Yeah. I think they also have, like, they have quite immediate chemistry. Like you said, there's an expectation with Eleanor, but also that I think for me, at least, it goes to this idea that, like, have we met before, or is there something, is there a reason why we're drawn together? And so they may just have this bond that they can't explain because they have met each other in so many lives so many times before.
It's the thing that Michael keeps talking about, right? Like, even when they weren't soulmates, they had an unbreakable, they found each other.
Yeah.
He always agreed to help her.
Yeah.
And they had an unbreakable bond. Dick Tracy called and they have an unbreakable bond.
Right.
I love that he's relentless with that Dick Tracy girl.
He just needs to land it once.
Yeah.
He just wants to bring it home so bad.
And the fact that he's tried more than once means that he'll never land it.
Tahani and Jason get drunk. Trevor gets them drunk and they have, you know, they disappear and everyone assumes that they've hooked up and I guess pounded it out. That turns out to not be what happens. Mm-hmm. Jason was a gentleman and tells a very convoluted story about where he spent the night. Yeah. But it does seem like Trevor is winning initially. Like he does seem as though he's getting what he wants. I also love the exchange that you have, Kirby, when she comes in hungover. Jamila comes in and says, attention, everyone, don't look at me. And you go, I don't know what to, like you've just said, look at me, don't look at me. It's a really fun, I don't know, like the energy of Simone is a different, really cool character in these people that we've come to know for two seasons already. Like you're another human representative.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I think it's very cool.
That's very cool.
Chidi hasn't slept. He's super exhausted. Did he write History of Philosophy Palto?
Yeah.
On the board?
Yeah.
Meaning Plato?
Yeah, he's a little tired.
Were there other bits explained for the tried for that?
Not that I recall. I mean, you can see that he's a little disheveled. His sweater vest is a little misbuttoned, and his collar's a little bit off.
That's very unbuttoned for him.
For Chidi, that's pretty messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's struggling with, you know, whether he can be friends with these guys and what it means to have this study. Simone tries to reassure him and say, like, I've done lots of these. I'll keep you on track. You don't have to worry about that. But it really eats at him. But then we have this sort of black hole gravity for Eleanor. Eleanor doesn't show back up. And he pauses and Simone already starts looking for an Uber or Lyft. Like, he's got to go get her. Oh, yeah. She, for some reason, is essential to this thing. Oh, she's the reason we're doing this,
yeah,
right?
Simone knows. Simone knows. I mean, Eleanor brought them together. She knows the importance of Eleanor to the project.
I guess that's a thematic element in this thing that gets said a few times. Eleanor, you're the reason we're all here, or whatever, right? Is that something that you guys aim for in the writer's room?
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing that, as I think Mike has discussed with you, you sort of lay a lot of it in and maybe lay in too much, and then you sort of peel it away. And
back some of it out.
Get it back to the point where it's just enough.
Chidi goes to get Eleanor, and she's reading Aus Weekly. Not Us Weekly, but AUS for
Aus Weekly, yeah.
I saw something on the cover about Hemsworth. Is that right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are denser jokes if I were to zoom in.
There's lots of nonsense Australian slang on there.
Oh, fun. Okay. Yeah.
It never gets shown, but she's staying in a motel that's called Waltzing Motelda.
No.
Yeah.
Get your coat.
Yeah.
She agrees to, he talks real good or whatever, and she agrees to come back into the group. So I guess, okay, here we go. Like, we're back onto the thing, and everything seems to be going back on track. Trevor seems to be foiled for the moment. And then, of course, in a bathroom, another Dick Tracy bathroom meeting, a portal opens up, and it's the doorman.
Yeah, it's Michael Malley.
Michael Malley strolls through to say, oh, good, you're all together. The judge wants to see you. He then, like, hilariously is fascinated by a water, you know, a sink.
Pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. So they go, and they meet with the judge, and she's mad. She had made it clear that they were supposed to be down there once, right? And they've been down there lots of times, and they've abused this privilege. There are ripples for interfering with human interaction. England has left Europe. The Greatest Showman made $400 million, and the Jacksonville Jaguars are somehow good now.
Yeah.
Is it a Joe Mandy line to say that whether Blake Bortles is kind of okay is being debated amongst experts?
I wish I could remember the exact origin of all of that. But we went through a number of different, like, possible things that could be, you know, what were the effects of Michael's presence on Earth.
Are there others you remember off the top of your head?
Well, we went back and forth a lot about Byron Allen owning the Weather Channel.
Okay.
And whether anyone would even understand what that sentence meant.
I think it's meant to be ununderstandable,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like, is that a good... Yeah,
I don't know, but it's weird.
It's weird,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, no doubt the show definitely helps Google.
People will look stuff up.
We will look stuff up. I didn't know. I was on set. We were talking and I asked Manny, I was like, are the Jacksonville, did they make that up? And they were like, he was like, no, that's a real team. And I was like, oh, and Blake Bortles, that's a real person? And he was like, yeah, it's a real person.
Stranger still is that when you guys began, it was a fairly obscure team and he was an obscure quarterback. And then they got good.
They genuinely got better. Yeah.
Do you think it's a show? I think it's a show. I think it's, you know, sometimes if you're like, if you give someone positive reinforcement,
right. Mm-hmm.
They get better, yeah, or they've got better, but you don't know.
Yeah, we're just bolstering his confidence.
Yeah.
It's like that thing of, you know, if you swear at a plant and then you say to another plant, I love you, and the plant you swear at dies, and the one that you say, I love you too, like,
yeah,
blossoms.
Yeah.
There's still emotional undercurrents here. The judge says, you two are going back to the bad place. And Darcy, as Janet very sweetly says, but they'll retire Michael. Like, there are still stakes to this.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten fairly ridiculous, and we've just come off these ridiculous lines about, you know, Brexit and stuff. But Janet might be marbleized. Michael might be molecule burned on the surface of a billion suns kind of thing. Like, there are still stakes. And as Mike talked about in a recent episode of this podcast, the mustard that Maya Rudolph puts on her, like, maybe you should have.
Oh, yeah.
Were you there?
Her anger is like a full body dance.
It's a convulsion.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Did it get there and you used those takes, or did she do that sort of thing the entire time?
I mean, from what I saw when I was on set, you could have used any one of the takes that she did and it would have been amazing.
She is fairly special.
Yeah. That's one of those ones where you stay out of the way. You just sit at Video Village and you watch it and you have fun.
Yeah. She is a sniper.
Yeah.
A savant, I think Mike called her. The doorman helps them escape, which is enormously surprising because he's been so apathetic to this point and hasn't really done anything. But it's, you know, sort of in a good place thing. I feel like that's the result and the ultimate payoff for Michael having brought him that frog travel mug.
Yeah.
In the previous episode, like, they're doing it. They're friends now. And he even says, good luck, Frogman. I'm pulling for you. It's very sweet.
And his name is Jeff, apparently.
Isn't that amazing? I love when the mundane works its way into the afterlife. Kirby, you have an on-screen kiss with William Jackson Harper.
Yeah.
That's been the subject of conversations, not that particular kiss, but kisses on this podcast and in this show. Because one that was shared between Jamila and Manny was each of their seventh kiss ever, the seventh
Whoa.
Person they've ever kissed. Darcy and Kristen and I both thought that number was very low. Was this your seventh kiss?
What, in real life?
In real life.
Oh, that's crazy. Their seventh kiss in real life. I thought you meant on screen.
Yes. Oh, no.
It was their seventh kiss, both of their seventh kisses in real life?
That's what I've been trying to tell you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that.
Two people that hot?
Two people, truly, two people that, that's what happens. See, the hot people, they hold all their kisses. They save them, they squander them.
Yeah.
So it's all for them.
The that kiss happens at an inappropriate time. You're in your office during office hours, and there's somebody standing by looking to tell you that he can't come to class because his grandmother's dead, right?
Yeah. And I got to say about that kiss, actually probably, if not one of, but or maybe the least awkward on-screen kiss I've ever had to do. And I think it's because Will is so cool and chill and we got on so well and chatted so much that it didn't feel, it wasn't like, normally there's all this talk before and like, is this, and you just feel nervous and you don't know them. But we were just like messing around and joking, and immediately on day one, he made me feel like part of the team.
Yeah.
So that when that kiss didn't feel like an on-screen kiss, it was just like, oh, this is a bit we do and then we carry on. There was no awkwardness. And I don't think I've ever felt that before. So that was really cool. But the kid who is explaining, and that's such a short scene, but it was so fun.
Right. It's a fun reveal that he's there the whole time.
It's such a fun reveal. Yeah. It's such a fun reveal. In that moment, I'm having a kind of a heart-to-heart, or a student is having a heart-to-heart with me, and he's explaining that his, I think it's his grandmother has passed away, and it's you know, a moment that is very serious, and they burst into my office. But the kid who was talking to me, who plays my student, his name is Johnny, and he's wonderful, and he's very funny, and he's English also, and is doing an incredible Australian accent. And I remember complimenting him because I was like, are you Australian? His name's Johnny, and he's great. And I bumped into him actually a few days ago at a party, and my friend came up to me and was like, you know my friend Johnny? And I was like, I don't know. And he brought me over and he was like, Johnny. And I was like, oh, wow, we did that scene together and it was so fun. I thought you were so great. And he goes, oh, I'll meet my mum. And his mum is Tracy Ullman. And
Tracy Ullman.
Yeah. And we met at that party. So he has funny running in his, in it, running through his blood.
Dan Schofield, what's good?
Well, I'll say two things. For anyone who has not watched some of the other shows that Kirby is in, Barry is fantastic. Killing Eve is fantastic. So, you know, after you watch our show, go watch these other fun programs.
Interesting, yes.
But other than that, I would say that telling people what you think about them is good.
Oh.
One thing that I like about this podcast is hearing my coworkers, you know, talk to each other and hearing them praise the work of each other. We had a writer's dinner recently where we all went around the table and sort of gave little toasts to each other. And it just reminded me that, like, telling people what you think about them, provided it's positive, is really satisfying, really makes you feel good, really makes them feel good. You might think that they know it, but they might not. They might not know it. They might want to hear it.
I think that's great.
I think that's so lovely.
Yeah, we don't do that enough.
Man.
And it's not a sign of weakness or, you know, not being tough or whatever to say something nice about somebody. It makes the world better. It is sort of that wishful thinking or positive affirmation kind of thing that that person will be better for having been told that they're good. Kirby Hall-Baptiste, what's good?
It's actually very somewhat similar to Dan's. I had something, but Dan's prompted me. I think what's good is take pictures of your family. And not for anyone, not for to put on social media or anything like that. But I went home recently, I went back to London, and I took a photo that I set up my little phone and did a timer, and it's my nan, my grandma, my mum, me, and my niece. And that's four generations of women in our family that have all kind of, you know, like my nan is kind of directly responsible for. And it's just a photo that I literally set up on my camera and put on the self timer and balanced it on the radiator and took a photo. And it might be my favorite photo that I've ever taken or have seen of my family. And my family don't like photos to be taken. My mom is very like, I don't want a photo. And my nan doesn't really care about them.
And you're an actress.
And I'm an actress and I need the photos. No, but just take them. And I also recently bought a film camera so I can take photos, because I don't want them for other people's consumption. I want them for myself. And I think it's nice, particularly you take pictures of your friends, but taking photos of your family, particularly older family members, I think we forget about that because a lot of the pictures we take are to show how cool we are or whatever we're doing.
What we're eating. Yeah.
What we're eating, where, you know, this pop-up I went to. But I think it's good. That's what's good. Take photos of your family.
Is that a photo that you would print and frame?
Yeah, I'm going to print it. I think I might do it for Christmas because I haven't had the time. So Christmas is coming up. So I'll do that and print one out for everyone and print one out for my sister-in-law so she can have it of, you know, her daughter and my nan and everyone. And I really love it. And it will prompt me if I do it for Christmas of printing out a lot of the other ones that I've been meaning to print out as well.
Kirby and Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for listening. This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Go do something good.
Janet, what have we learned today?
A good place was the place inside of us all along that was good.
Oh, Janet, have you been sneaking magnets again?
You've been sneaking magnets.
Oh, this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
That was Lizzie Pace. Mm. Music composed by David Schwartz.
Edited by Trey Booty. Booty? Booty.
Oh, Janet.